Ladies and gentlemen, your conference call is about to begin. Here is your moderator, Raymond Ibrahim.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us today for another Middle East Forum conference call. Our guest speaker today is Mr. Ali Alfona, he's a visiting research fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, and he's also a doctoral candidate in political science at the University of Copenhagen. Mr. Alfona researches civil-military relations in Iran with a special focus on the role of the Revolutionary Guards Corps. And he's joining us today to speak specifically about the current situation in Iran, specifically with the post-election results and all that's gone on there. And hopefully he'll be answering questions such as how will the regime, the current regime, deal with this challenge to its legitimacy, and if the democracy movement to become a fixture of Iranian politics or not, and how this will affect the region, including Israel. Mr. Alfona, thank you for joining us. Can you please tell us some of your thoughts on all this?
Thank you so much, Dr. Ibrahim. Thank you very, very much for your kind invitation and for providing me with this opportunity to share my analysis with your distinguished audience. If my voice is a bit frail, it is because of my health, but I have to tell you that my health conditions are much better than the health conditions of the Islamic Republic nowadays. The Islamic Republic is going through a major transformation, which is going to affect the politics of the Islamic Republic for many, many, many years to come. Now, I'm sure that this audience is one which is interested in history and politics. And we all, as children, we dream of experiencing, seeing with your eyes, with our own eyes, great transformation and great events of history, such as, the coronation of Cyrus the Great. You know, everyone would have loved to see that. I was in Vienna on June 28 this year, and I was thinking of how June 28, 1914 was in Vienna. So we always dream of the great events of the past because we are interested in history. But right now in the Islamic Republic of Iran, history is passing through our very, very eyes. And what is going to happen in Iran will affect Iran for many, many years to come. Now, the most of the press, especially the Western press, is talking about the election and the legitimacy crisis and demonstrations, which of course is very important. But there is one more issue which is even more important, and it is the fact that the Islamic Republic for the past three decades, for the past 30 years, has been ruled by the Shia clergy and has been defended against internal and external enemies by a elite military organization called Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. Now, there was, in other words, a very clear a division of labor between the two. And this alliance between the revolutionary Shia clergy and the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps is actually the fundamental of the Islamic Republic. If one of the two does not exist, well, the Islamic Republic actually collapses. Now something is happening in the Islamic Republic. It did not start with the election. It started earlier, but it is very, very important to know that the Islamic Republic is no longer a theocracy. It is no longer led by the clergy. If you look at the composition of Mr. Ahmadinejad's government, now to begin with the president himself, Mr. Ahmadinejad, he's not a cleric. He is a former member of the Revolutionary Guard. He was not a senior member of the Guards, but he was a Guards member. If you look at his cabinet, only one clergyman is left. More than half of the cabinet are former members of the Revolutionary Guards. If you look at the composition of the parliament, most of the parliamentarians, more than half it is believed, are former members of the Revolutionary Guard, and a declining number is members of the clergy who are members of the parliament. And the same is also true of general governors in Iran. So the political level of the Islamic Republic is changing hands from the Shia clergy into the hands of the former officer of the Revolutionary Guards. This is not only true of the political system, but also of the economy. The economic great actors of Iran, known to you from the 1980s, the Rafsanjani families, other technocratic families who went into business in late 1980s and beginning of 1990s, they are being thrown out of business by the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. And the private sector, which has always had very, very difficult times in Iran, operating and doing business, remaining in business, is even facing even greater challenges because the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps also is an economic actor, independent of the state. They make their own money, and they push private sector actors out of business because they do not want that competition from the private sector. If you look at even the religious sector, you see that the clergy is losing grip and losing control. And this may sound rather strange to you, but what do you think it means when somebody like Mr. Ahmadinejad says that he has direct access to God Almighty and he can talk to and he can see the 12th Imam of the Shias? Well, in reality, this is a very, very strange version of Shia Protestantism. By which Mr. Ahmadinejad is bypassing the authority of the Shia clergy to get access of God Almighty and 12th Imam. He no longer needs the clergy as middlemen to communicate with a holy being. And also, the other day, the Armed Forces Command Council Chief Brigadier General Firuzabadi, he wrote an open letter to the 12th Imam, to the Shia Messiah, complaining about how badly Mr. Mousavi is behaving after his election defeat. Now, in other words, the IRGC, the Revolutionary Guards, is using, or more correctly, of course, abusing religious beliefs of people, and especially that part of the religious beliefs of people which has to do with Day of Doom, with return of the Mahdi, and the 12th Imam, in order to legitimize its own power base, independent of the clergy. I could just go on and even tell you that, you know, Iranian movies are even, you know, are heavily influenced by Revolutionary Guards control. I know that many of you are culturally interested, so you watch movie products coming out of Iran to international film festivals in New York and Cannes. But of course, you also may know that the majority of Iranians don't watch that kind of art movies. Most Iranians want to see action. So when they go to cinemas, they are more than likely to see a movie produced by the War Propaganda Office of the Revolutionary Guards, which today is one of the largest movie producers of Iran and produces war movies. So it propagates, you know, the Revolutionary Guards also propagates its cultural worldview through movies, through books, through all sorts of things. Now, how about election issue? Let me tell you this. This trend of militarization of Iran did not begin with this election. The trend of militarization began with the coming to power and election victory of, especially after coming to power of Mr. Khatami. Khatami's election victory back in 1997 shocked and horrified Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei. He was so afraid by the two forces that he considered were against him. Inside Iran, he saw a huge number of Iranians, more than 20 million Iranians, who demanded reform. And he was afraid that if the system would give after the demands for reform, the entire system could collapse. And the analysis his advisors made was that Mr. Khatami is in reality Ayatollah Gorbachev. It means that he may be a devout person. He may be loyal towards the regime. But the reforms that he's making is going to undo the regime and is going to be the death of the regime. So you need to stop him. So in order to stop internal, you know, demands for regime, and in order to suppress them, Ayatollah Khamenei mobilized the Revolutionary Guards and accelerated their access to public offices, to the economy, to the cultural life of Iran, to even to the religious life of Iran, which is not particularly fond and friendly of Ayatollah Khamenei and friendly towards it, mobilized the Revolutionary Guards to suppress all that. And the other pressure that Ayatollah Khamenei was facing back in late 1970s, when Mr. Khatami was elected, was of course the issue of the nuclear program and the pressure from outside. And Ayatollah Khamenei believes that the members of the Revolutionary Guards, both current and former members of the Revolutionary Guard, are better than many other technocratic types to run the country and to suppress dissent and to see to it that the country survives in this very stormy sea of crisis that Iran is going through. Now, in other words, there is pressure from inside, there is pressure from outside, and Ayatollah Khamenei consistently supports the Revolutionary Guards. The Revolutionary Guards knows fears and paranoias of Mr. Khamenei. They know it very, very well. And they have played their cards so expertly during these elections. Many, many months, not to say years before this election, the Revolutionary Guards Political Indoctrination Bureau started talking about a velvet revolution. And they said that the Western powers, and especially, you know, they were starting a velvet revolution against the regime, and that external threats against Iran were not so dominant, but the threat would come from inside. And that these people would be dressed like civil rights activists who demanded their vote back, but in reality they are rioters and they are revolutionaries, they are not reformers. So they played on Ayatollah Khamenei's fear of velvet revolutions and foreign conspiracies against Iran. And when the election came, Mr. Ahmadinejad cheated. Now, in Iran, cheating in elections is really nothing new. But they used to cheat in a fairly, if I may say so, respectful way, which means in such a way that they do not insult the intelligence of the people. They cheat, you know, with the marginals. They don't declare somebody huge winner of election. The election goes to the second round, and then they declare their own candidate winner of the election. And if the case was like, you know, Mr. Khatami, who was extremely popular, they would not cheat. You know, they would make life difficult for him after he has taken office. This time they cheated in a very overt way because they knew that people would go into the streets and demonstrate. And what did they do afterwards? Well, they went back to, you know, the Revolutionary Guards and Mr. Ahmadinejad. They went back to Mr. Khamenei and told him that he's and the country is facing a velvet revolution. And they are demanding authorization to suppress it totally. This is their scheme. This is their plan. And this is where we stand right now, today, and they are still hoping to get that final piece of authorization from Ayatollah Khamenei to not only imprison the political class of Iran, the likes of Rafsanjani and Khatami and everybody who has ruled Iran, every clerical person who has ruled Iran for the past 30 years. They actually want to do away with them, either to have them under house arrest, to force them to leave the country, or even physically exterminate them. So history is developing before our own eyes. This is a unique moment of studying Iranian affairs, and also a very good opportunity to discuss matters, anything related with Iran. Thank you. And these are this is my introduction to our discussion today.
Thank you, Mr. Alfona. Karen?
Hi, everyone. To join the question and answer session queue, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. I will announce each caller prior to bringing you into the conference. Please remember that if you have your phone on mute, take it off mute when you are selected to ask your question. Again, to join the question and answer session queue, press star 1 on your telephone keypad.
I'd like to claim the first question if possible.
Mr.
Alfona, all that you say is extremely interesting and obviously very relevant. What I would like to figure out or determine is obviously this is an epic of change, the way you present it. Is there anything that the West or Israel can do to help further this this change, which seems to be moving in a better direction, unless, of course, it gets thwarted by the Republic?
I see. Well, to be quite honest, I would be very sorry if I have given you the impression that the Islamic Republic is on the verge of collapse. This is not collapsing. The Islamic Republic is changing. But change, you know, one should be very careful when you speak of change, because change can be to the better and change can be to the worse. Right. And in this case, change seems to be to the worse. The Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps is cleansing and purging the system of clerics in the system. And Iran is very, very fast transforming into a military dictatorship. And power is going to be in the hands of fewer people rather than a multiple number of centers of power in Iran. So militarization of Iran is bound to be a problem. You know, the let me tell you, to begin with, the Revolutionary Guard's ideology is one of permanence of the revolution. They have a Trotskyist understanding of revolutions. In other words, a revolution is not something that took place back in 1979 and now is a historical event which is totally forgotten. No, the revolution is a permanent phenomenon which continues forever and ever. And in order to keep a revolution alive, you need a motor, you need an engine, you need an agent keeping the revolution alive. And you need certain mechanisms to do so. Now, the engine is the Revolutionary Guards. And the method they use in order to keep the revolution alive is creating crisis in Iran's relations with its neighbors and with Israel and America. In other words, I even don't know if I can call that his historical enemies of the Islamic Republic. I know that for certain periods of time, Iran has had, in the Islamic Republic has had fairly pragmatic relations toward both U.S. and Israel. But the Revolutionary Guard is in need of a permanent state of crisis in Iran's relations with foreign countries, especially with the mythical enemies such as Israel and the United States. So that problem would not get solved. Secondly, the Revolutionary Guards also is in desperate need of foreign enemies in order to suppress internal rivals. What do you think happens whenever those poor people who are demonstrating in the streets of Iran are arrested and are forced to make confessions live on television? Well, you know, first they're tortured and then they make forced confessions on television. And they confess to be CIA agents, they confess to be in the pay of the Zionist regime, and all sorts of things. So unfortunately, the Revolutionary Guard is in need of foreign enemies and will use this. How the West can use this situation, I believe, is first and foremost to devise a strategy which is a real strategy. You know, the most ambitious thing that many people here in America talk about sometimes is bombing of Iran. Well, bombing is not a strategy. You need a certain strategy. The Western countries had a certain strategy to deal with the Eastern Bloc and the Soviet Union. The Western countries also need a strategy to deal with the Islamic Republic, especially should the Islamic Republic actually evolve into a military regime which is anti-Western, anti-American, and anti-Israeli. So that, I think, is very, very important. And secondly, the West should also learn from its experiences with trying to devise a strategy towards the Soviet Union. We, as a matter of fact, know that containment policy of the U.S. against the Soviet Union actually worked. The economic warfare against the Soviet Union actually worked, denied the Soviet Union development that otherwise could have secured the Soviet Union some more decades of development and survival. So these are the things that I think are important to keep in mind when thinking about how to deal with a militarized Iran.
Okay, we have a question from Mr. David Kudesh. Go ahead.
Thank you for your comments. Number one, I was very personally upset to see Obama, President Obama, so passive while our European allies were appalled by the force of the Revolutionary Guard. And also, it seems that so many of the foreign policy efforts diplomatically and elsewhere of the U.S. Towards Iran have been about 179 degrees off course for a very extended period of time. It looks like we're idiots and they're playing us as the bad enemy, where we have very little involvement in supporting the anti-Mullah thugocracy. Any comments?
Yes, please let me start with one part which you did not mention, and it is, of course, the nuclear issue and how the U.S. has dealt with Iran's nuclear issue. Let me tell you all, share with you a joke, an Iranian joke. There is this Iranian mother who wants her daughter to marry a suitable young Iranian gentleman. But, you know, daughter asks, you know, mother, how do you expect me to marry a young gentleman who is an atheist? He does not believe in hell. He does not believe in heaven. How can I marry such a person? And the mother says, you marry him and the two of us will make him believe in existence of hell. Now, the entire world has, for the past many, many years, you know, including the United States, has tried to make the Islamic Republic of Iran leadership believe in existence of heaven. And the entire world has tried to show the path to heaven to the Islamic Republic when it comes to its nuclear issue. But there is no sanction when it does not listen to us. And of course, why should the Islamic Republic listen to anyone if there is no sanction possibility, if there is no credible threat, especially of use of force? The Islamic Republic leadership has great respect for use of force. As long as there is no credible threat, then they will, of course, not listen. Also, the Islamic Republic has, as you said very, very correctly, and I believe it is a very, very important issue to raise, has tried to play the different great powers against each other, especially Europe against America, Russia and China against America. But in the end, I must say that if the U.S. decides with itself what it wants to do with Iran, the decision needs to be taken in D.C. If U.S. government administration, any administration, finds out what it wants to do, you can make your allies have the same opinion as you, because most of them, even non-allies such as China and Russia, they have much greater interest in cooperation with the U.S. than sacrificing anything, you know, for the sake of Iran and their interest in Iran, which is not as great as their interest in America. So I think that is a very important issue. Secondly, allow me also to take that part of your presentation, your comment, which was about Mr. Obama's posture towards the Islamic Republic. I agree with you. I fully agree with you. Mr. Obama, I believe, is a very civilized man, and I respect him because he is, unlike Mr. Ahmadinejad, chosen by his people. A majority of Americans have chosen him, and I may not agree with all his policy recommendations. With some of them, I may disagree totally, but I respect him because he's chosen by the American people. But I think that he is very, very wrong, especially when it comes to his rhetoric towards Iran. He believes that by being soft-spoken and friendly, he can make Iran cooperative. But unfortunately, we see the opposite. His soft-spokenness is perceived as a sign of weakness in Tehran, and that is a tragedy.
Okay, our next question comes from Dr. Carol Weinberg. Go ahead.
No, I didn't have a question. I'm sorry.
Okay, our next question comes from Mr. Leon Korngold. Mr. Korngold?
I have no question.
Okay, our last question is from Mr. Kenneth Bielkin. Mr. Bjalken?
Hello, yes. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah. I'd like to ask you about the Revolutionary Guard. We've had very little coverage in our press about personalities or structure or the extent to which they're committed to the service of the mullahs. The Iranian military has historically, as I understand it, not been active in politics. Do they have, let's say, like the Pakistani army, an organization which parallels governmental structure, which is prepared to take over and develop some kind of military civilian leadership if it should appear to them that some kind of military takeover in order to have a responsible agency would be in the best interest of the country?
Thank you for your great question. It is such an important question. The regular Iranian army has very, very little history of political interventions. This is one of the reasons why the revolutionaries succeeded back in 1979, because the Shah's army did not intervene. The Revolutionary Guard, on the other hand, is a totally different type of organization, because it is an ideological army, and it was shaped to intervene in politics. And its very reason of existence is to protect the ideological base of the Islamic Republic. In the constitution of the Islamic Republic, it is written that the Revolutionary Guard is expected to defend the revolution and its achievements. Now, these are very, very abstract terms, revolution and its achievements. And they are meant to be very abstract, because whenever something happens that the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps does not like, dislikes, or the dominant clergy dislikes, they call upon the Revolutionary Guards to rectify it, to correct it, and to direct the Islamic Republic's development towards those revolutionary, abstract revolutionary goals. And if you look at the structure of the Revolutionary Guards, it is something that I have written in several pieces. All my material is available for free at American Enterprise Institute's website. One of my pieces is the structural changes in the Revolutionary Guard. You see that the Revolutionary Guard's structure is not like a military organization, but very much like a political party, as you also suggested. A political party which is ready to take hold of power any moment, should it be possible. And this organization is very much interested to take more and more political power to itself. They dislike the clerics. This may come as a surprise to you, but they really do dislike the clerics, because they believe that many of the clerics have grown soft, and that the clerics, by the way, the first generation of the Revolutionary Guards members disliked the revolutionary, they disliked the clergy people at the time they found out how the clergy people are as private man, you know. What happened back then was that the Iranian police was not prepared, back in 79 and 1980-82, the Iranian police was not capable of protecting the leading members of the clergy, the leaders of the revolution. So what the clergy did was that they hired the Revolutionary Guards to protect them as some kind of bodyguards. But and in the eyes of the bodyguards, these people with turbans, and ropes, they were almost saints, you know, because they were clerics. But then these bodyguards found out in the private home of those clergymen that they were not practicing what they were preaching in the mosques. They committed sins that they killed other people for. They executed other people for. So from that time, the Revolutionary Guard lost its respect for members of the clergy. And nowadays, especially Ayatollah Khamenei is so reliant upon the Revolutionary Guards, and he has weakened all other centers of power so much that he has almost become a hostage in the hands of his own Praetorian Guard.
Okay, I think we've come to the end of the call. And
does the army have any cogency or any coherence? Does the army stand for anything anymore?
The army is still in conflict with the Revolutionary Guards, but the army is much more controlled than and suppressed than the Revolutionary Guard. Very much like in the Red Army and in People's Liberation Army in China, there are many political ideological commissars who report on the officers of the army. Unfortunately, I think it is very difficult to imagine an army revolt, army coup against the Islamic Republic, and power will very easily fall into the hands of the Revolutionary Guards right now.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Alfona. I'm sorry, but we've come to the end of our time. Obviously, this is a very important discussion. There's much more to be said. And I'd like to thank everyone who joined us today, and especially you, Mr. Ali Alfona, for giving us
thank
much
you.
To think about. Thank you.
Thank you.